This is Bristol Band Beyond for Friday, October 16th. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Glad to have you joining us here for KDLG's weekly news magazine. Coming up this week, a Ugashic man is still missing at sea today. A friend of Roland Briggs shares some thoughts.
He is very resourceful and he is very experienced in dealing with all kinds of situations in the less than the best of circumstances, to say the least. And we have great hope that we'll find Roly safe and sound.
Plus, we'll get an update from the AFN annual convention in Anchorage this morning and reaction from some of the students who attended the Elders and Youth Conference earlier this week.
Dude, that was sick. That was freaking history in the making right in front of us.
The Aleknagik Wood River Bridge was officially opened this week. After how many years of planning and dreaming that day would come, North Shore resident Raymond Conquest sits down and shares some thoughts about the years of dangerous crossings and years of advocacy for the project.
Lyman Hoffman became senator. I used to push him a lot, tell him we needed one badly, especially mostly for school children and older people.
Those stories, plus some tips for winterizing your boat, coming up after a look back at some of the week's news. Last weekend, authorities reported that another young person had taken his own life in the village of Hooper Bay. The 21-year-old man was found at his parents' house Saturday. In the past 3 weeks, a total of 4 young people, all in their 20s, have committed suicide in Hooper Bay. On Saturday in Oregon, a funeral service was held for former Bristol Bay Borough Police Chief Rodney Invelson, who died September 28th at the age of 49. Invelson resigned from the Bristol Bay Borough Police Department last spring and in September had hired on to a new police department in Oregon when he became suddenly and unexpectedly ill. He succumbed to terminal cancer after a week in the hospital. Chief Invelson was highly regarded for his law enforcement efforts and community service in Bristol Bay. On Monday came the surprise announcement from the Elders and Youth Conference in Anchorage.
Well, moments ago, the inaugural Indigenous Peoples Day of Alaska.
That was First Alaskans President Liz Medicine Crow who got to make the announcement. Both the City of Anchorage and the State of Alaska issued proclamations declaring recognition of Indigenous Peoples Day rather than Columbus Day. On Tuesday, about 200 people gathered to cut the ribbon on the new Aleknagik Wood River Bridge. The 440-foot bridge connecting the north and south shores of Aleknagik was decades in the planning, but just 2 years in the making. It opened to foot and vehicle traffic Tuesday afternoon. Molly Chythluk said she could hardly believe the estimated $25 million bridge was finally a reality.
It's just amazing. Nothing that I've ever imagined would ever happen when I started school here in 1951.
In other news, a U.S. House committee announced Wednesday that it is scheduling a hearing in November to investigate whether the EPA has acted fairly in proposing preemptive restrictions against the Pebble Mine project. Texas Republican Lamar Smith chairs the Science, Space, and Technology Committee and said he has concerns about the agency's efforts following the release of the Cohen report last week. On Thursday morning, a Ugashic man was reported overdue on a trip home from Igigik. 55-year-old Roland Briggs was last seen getting fuel on his 43-foot landing craft vessel in Igigik Tuesday and was expected back in Ugashic Wednesday afternoon. The Coast Guard launched a C-130, 2 helicopters, and redirected the cutter Monroe to the search area. Coast Guard Petty Officer Grant DeVoist offered the latest Friday morning.
Yesterday evening, our HC-130 Hercules aircraft crew spotted some debris and were able to confirm that it matches a description of items that were aboard the landing craft, according to the operator's spouse.
A number of planes and boats have joined in the search, which is continuing today. And this morning, the Dillingham Elementary School added another name to its Reader's Hall of Fame. Fifth grader Kylie Klaus is the first to be inducted into the Million Word Club this year. To get there, she says she's already read 24 books since the start of the school year. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. We'll begin this week with a developing story. Roland Briggs of Ugashic has been missing for 2 days following a boat trip between Igigik and Ugashic earlier this week. He was expected back home Wednesday and was called in as overdue Thursday morning. Coast Guard now reports that some debris, possibly matching a description of the 43-foot landing craft Kedovik, was spotted Thursday evening. Search continues today with Coast Guard, State Trooper, and private aircraft scouring the water and beaches. Earlier this morning, I spoke with Lake and Peninsula Mayor Glenn Allsworth, who has known Roland Briggs since the two were children.
Yeah, Roland actually originally lived in Port Allsworth. His parents moved into the Port Allsworth area on Lake Clark in the early 50s, and they moved down to Ugashik in the early 60s to start up a salmon canning operation. So Roland was actually born when the family was in Lake Clark, and we kind of grew up together there as young people, and then he moved off when I was perhaps 9 or 10 years old. And I've probably seen him occasionally off and on every year since, as I've flown throughout the region there. He's been active in the salmon canning and processing business there in Ugashik, as well as some other ventures with working, flying, and freighting, and doing some other things like that.
I've always heard he's a hardworking guy, and somebody put it to me yesterday. They said he's pretty scrappy.
Yeah, he's very resourceful, and he is very scrappy. He's very experienced in dealing with all kinds of situations in the less than the best of circumstances, to say the least. And we have great hope that we'll find Roly safe and sound here. I'd encourage folks to keep their eyes and ears open. It's anywhere in the Bristol Bay area, and also keep Victoria and Roly in your prayers and thoughts today as the search continues.
You said that you also had aircraft helping participate in the search yesterday.
We had run one of our flights into the area yesterday and had them search both offshore in the ocean. One of our twin-engine aircraft went offshore and flew the route and then returned on the coastline. I know several of the guides in the area have taken their Super Cubs and flown real close, low-level surveillance of the coastline to looking for such things as footprints and the other things that you could see from a real low level. So I know there's some good effort being spent there, and our Coast Guard was out there with both a C-130 and a helicopter yesterday applying some really good search techniques in the area, and so we're hopeful that they'll turn something positive up.
Glenn, it seems to me that people in this part of the world are not unfamiliar with these interim periods where the search is on, there's no trace, no clues yet, but that doesn't mean it's ever an easy situation to deal with.
Well, I think it's a great evaluation. We live in a sparsely populated, vast area. Many times communication isn't what it could be or should be. And so we have to just keep up our hope and our faith and keep searching. It's a big, a lot of water, a big area. The shoreline is rather defined and confined. That's pretty easy to search, but in that limited area. But the ocean itself is it's awfully big, and if a boat's steering went awry or something happened in navigation, in the course of, you know, a day or two, a boat can get far afield from where we might expect it to be, and I think we can't rule out any possibilities at this point.
Glenn Allsworth is the longtime mayor of the Lake and Peninsula Borough, also a longtime friend of Roland Briggs, who's still missing as of this morning. Glenn, thank you for the update, and I hope we speak soon on better terms here.
Dave, I'd look forward to it. If you hear something, please let us know, and we'll keep looking.
The Alaska Federation of Natives annual convention is going on this week in Anchorage. Tribal leaders, the governor, Alaska's congressional delegation have all or all will be making appearances and speeches amidst cultural performances and what will soon be the forming of resolutions and advocacy statements. Earlier this morning, I spoke with Tanya Salmon from Igiagig, who was at the convention this year as part of the Bristol Bay Native Association representation.
There's a lot of positive energy going around and a lot of people ready to make changes. I see a more active approach to a lot of situations and issues.
It was kind of exciting, I think, to see both state and Anchorage momentum to change the holiday earlier this week. What did you think about that?
I think that's a positive approach for Alaska, and I've heard a lot from a lot of the tribal leaders from around our region, and I've been talking a lot with the youth and with the elders. They all think that's a great change and that it should have been changed years ago.
So what's your outlook for today and tomorrow? Should there be some kind of jostling as resolutions get put together and those sorts of things?
Oh, a big resolution coming up this year, and I'm a big advocate for, is to keep the small schools open because, you know, Igaliok has 19 students, and that is a huge issue that I've been fighting for.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to hearing more news from the convention today and through the weekend. Tanya Salmon from Igaliok speaking to us from Anchorage this morning. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And delegations of area students attended the Elders and Youth Conference earlier in the week. They were on hand Monday as Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz proclaimed the annual Indigenous Peoples Day just before Governor Bill Walker announced a similar one-off holiday statewide. Back on Thursday, some of the Dillingham High School delegation offered these reflections on the conference events and Monday's announcement.
My name is Wesley Nikolai, and I could sound out my epic name if you want. Chungawiach. This is my first time going to AFN, so it was wonderful being there. Oh yeah, man, Chennai Night was pretty cool. Their dance routine and clinkets, haidas. Every culture's dance routines is pretty great.
My name is Charlene Evolt, and it was intense when they announced the Indigenous Peoples Day for Anchorage, and then it got even crazier when they were like, oh wait, it's the whole state.
Dude, that was sick. That was freaking history in the making right in front of us. Hi, my name is Andrew Acrocock. It was freaking cool with the whole Anchorage thing going on. They said, oh, this is going to be for Anchorage, Indigenous Peoples Day. Then probably like 10, 20 minutes later, they came back up on the stage. We have even better news. The governor just now said that it's for the whole state now, Indigenous Peoples Day. And, oh, man, my ears hurt from how loud everyone was.
What did you think of Columbus Day in past years?
Stupid. Because, oh, I discovered this. Oh, you didn't discover it. What do you call those people who are already there? Didn't discover nothing.
I think one of my favorite parts about that is we were the first state in the nation to do that. And something Liz Medicine Crow said really stood out to me was that we're kind of leading our country with the Indigenous Peoples Day. And I really enjoyed that.
My name is Anne Louise Hossett, and I think that it was really cool to see the transition of the topics for the past 3 years. The first year it was drugs and alcohol, the second year was suicide, and this year was getting our language back in our communities. And I think that it's a great experience to see that Indigenous Day become a statewide thing, because last year it was something that we did in our community, and this year it's a statewide. I think now that Indigenous Day is a statewide thing, that maybe it would inspire others to learn more about their culture.
You're listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. On a sparkling, clear, and sunny fall Tuesday, October 13th to be precise, the north and south shores of Aleknagik were officially linked by a long-awaited new bridge. Spanning 440 feet rather across and 40 feet above the Wood River, the bridge offers safe transit for North Shore residents heading to school, the hospital, the airport, or just to get some groceries. And it opens up some new exploring for Dillingham residents looking to extend a Sunday drive or hike. The price tag was steep, an estimated $25 million, but many lives have been lost over the years crossing the lake. This week I was joined by one of the longtime advocates for building that bridge.
My name's Raymond Conquest. I'm 87 years old. I was born and raised in Bethel area and then moved to Dillingham when I was about 17 years old.
Raymond Conquest is an elder and longtime resident of the North Shore. He's known for always helping people cross the lake, day or night, summer, winter, or even in the shoulder seasons. He's also an uncle to Senator Lyman Hoffman, who was instrumental in steering federal funds towards this bridge project. When Raymond sat down with me Thursday, I asked him first about the ribbon-cutting ceremony Tuesday.
It wasn't real good. Everybody seemed to enjoy it. I was fortunate to be with my nephew, Senator Hoffman. Rode across with him in the first car, I guess.
First car going across the new bridge.
After they cut the ribbon, yeah.
Right. Mm. Let's talk about a little bit of the history, because your name comes up quite a bit when people talk about the reasons behind building the bridge.
Well, you know, my wife and I, well, years ago, I've been married to her about 40 years. And we used to always seem like busy holly people back and forth that wanted to come to town, had no way.
By boat or snow machine or ATV?
Mostly by boat, or take them across the snow machine to the cars. And a lot of dude, and when Lyman Hoffman became senator, well, people talked about wanting a bridge, you know, and I used to push him a lot, tell him we needed one badly, especially mostly for school children and older people, because there have been a lot of snow machines, you know, been going through the lake and stuff like that, yeah.
Tell me about a few of those. I know that they reference at least a dozen people who have died, and many more have gone through. Tell me about some of the ones who died, if you don't mind.
Well, there's some of them that I didn't know, but there have been allergic boys, and like George Luzik lost a daughter and son the same day. I think it was New Year's Eve. Seemed like about four or five of all the Luchiks that went through and drowned.
You yourself went through the ice, at least once that I know of. This was recent.
Yeah, I went through.
2 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
The year before. Yeah, it was getting pretty dark. And as you see, you know, sometimes you look across the lake and the lights look a lot closer or further. And I thought I was far enough going from the Luchiks toward our side of the village there. And I lost the snow and I was following the snow go truck. Then I lost it in the ice, you know, and I just kept going. Pretty soon I went through.
Oh.
Yeah. Just sunk right there.
How deep was it?
Oh, I don't know. First of all, in my snow go was straight up and down, and I was standing on the front of it, held me up, and then when it tipped over, then I sunk.
You went all the way in?
Yeah. Two or three times, and, you know, I was in there quite a while, maybe, I'd say close to a half hour.
Somebody come get you?
Yeah, there, Ray Andrews and his Masa. They helped receive my lights, I guess, you know, when I was coming across, and he said they disappeared, so. He was just checking around. I could see him checking around. I was hollering. Guess he went and got the rescue team. But I give most of the credit because he's the one that came all the way right to the water. Had a rope. Ray jumped in the lake, wrapped the rope around me, and they pulled me out.
What's the worst time to make that crossing? When's the time when you say, you know what, we're going to have to wait till tomorrow?
Winter time, there are times, you know, white out, can't see nothing. A lot of time you just figure you're going right, but you're still going out of the way. And sooner or later you'll see water in front of you, and you got to turn back. But we all got to cross.
What do you think about having the bridge now with the traffic it might bring to the other side?
Well, some people, they figure, you know, it'll maybe get a little more, like I say, maybe people will be drinking more and drugs might come in. And that's me, I don't know, they don't. It seems to be, I'm sure glad we have the bridge, you know.
No concern about too many people coming up to
I don't, it don't bother me. They go right by my house now. They are very close now, the way they got the road.
You going to be out there yelling at people to slow down like... kind of turn into the old curmudgeon up there.
Yep. Well, we might get a fence put in there.
Okay. Good fences make good neighbors.
Yeah.
What do you think about the bridge? It's a beautiful bridge.
It's really beautiful. Everybody loves it.
Have you walked?
That's about the best view right off the bridge there to me.
It's gorgeous, right? Yeah. Right there off the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I bet come summertime when those reds are streaming upriver, it's going to be a good spot
to
watch.
A lot of pictures of good reds.
Somebody told me the other day, they said that you didn't think you'd live long enough to see that bridge.
Yeah, I used to say that, you know. I hope I live long enough to at least drive across it once before my time comes.
Well, you made it.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully, I'll be driving it a few more years.
Very good. Yep. Well, Raymond, I'd like to thank you for coming in. Good to speak with you.
You too.
Have a good trip back across that bridge.
Okay, thank you.
Temperatures are just starting to dip a bit, and right now many of the prudent amongst us are putting their boats away. Last spring, our friend Gabe Dunham, the Bristol Bay map agent with the Alaska Sea Grant Program, joined us over several weeks to talk about some good tips for prepping boats after a long winter. He's back now with some good advice for putting them back away into storage. Gabe, good to have you back.
Glad to be here, as always.
Been a while.
Yes, it has. Busy summer.
It was a busy summer, and summer is... quickly coming to an end. Still plenty of time to get out, but I know a lot of people are right now thinking, better hurry up and winterize that boat.
Yeah, that's certainly something that should be on most folks' mind as they're finishing up using their boat for the summer. And it's good to think about how we can preserve that investment so it starts right up next year and doesn't cost you money.
I have to say that I've heard a range of opinions between extremely important and I've never done it and my boat's always fine. What's your personal take on the importance of winterizing?
Well, regarding that last comment, I mean, everything is always fine until it breaks. That's something you have to keep in mind when you're dealing with a boat especially. Sometimes you can get away with not winterizing, particularly if you've got a nice warm garage that you park your boat in. But when it all comes down to it, it's good to remember that some winterizing attention and particularly changing your oil every now and then, that's all really good insurance to protect your investment.
Okay, so it's time to go out and winterize the boat. What in broad terms are you looking at?
Well, first we want to focus on taking care of the fuel system. Next, we want to focus on oil and lubrication. And last, we want to look at any potential corrosion problems that engine might run into from sitting over the winter.
Okay, let's start with fuel treatment. This involves putting some stabilizer in the gas for the winter, I think, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I've had pretty good luck with stable. The important thing to remember when treating your fuel system is that you can't just treat your fuel system and then walk away. It's really important that fuel system treatment, whatever you add in there, whatever you choose, has a chance to run through the engine. So it might be a good idea if you know that you're going to use your boat one more time, when you gas it up for that one last time before you take it out, put your fuel treatment in there. That way you know it's in the engine.
All right. Let's talk about oil, and we'll start with oil because I think it's going to be a little different for four-stroke and two-stroke engines.
Yeah, of course. And oil is also falls under one of those categories as being a really cheap insurance policy. And if you've got a significant amount of time, you've been running your boat out for a while, and again, we're talking about four strokes here, you want to change that oil because it's going to take any of those acids or impurities out of that oil that's been building up, and it's going to make sure that those acids aren't sitting in your engine for a long period of time. Regarding two-stroke, of course, you don't have to change the oil in your two-stroke. Might be a good idea to check your two-stroke oil reservoir to make sure there's no water in there by accident, because you don't want to leave that sitting in there over the winter. But generally, what you want to do definitely for both two-stroke and four-stroke outboards, for an outboard that's got a gear case on it, a propeller drive outboard, definitely change the gear oil, because that's going to tell you whether or not you maybe have some water in there that's got in there over the running season. For a jet drive engine, you want to definitely grease thoroughly those jet drive bearings and get any moisture out of there. And also for both the 2- and 4-stroke motors, you're going to grease all those fittings. And if you've got a cable steering system, it's a really good idea to take that cable out of the outboard and grease it and then put it back in.
Okay, a lot of 2-stroke outboard motor owners amongst our listenership, it's a good idea to fog that motor as part of the winterization.
Yeah, absolutely. I view it as a mandatory practice to fog a 2-cycle engine if you're going to leave it stored for a while. And the reason is that the internal parts of a 2-cycle motor are lubricated with that oil that goes in through with the gasoline. And that's pretty thin oil, and it tends to drip off the bearings and leave them unprotected over time. So the idea with getting that fogging oil in there is to make sure those bearings are protected from any sort of ambient moisture that's going to cause corrosion problems.
Procedures?
Yeah, with an outboard, it's best to remove the plastic cover off the carburetors, and while the engine's running and fully up to operating temperature, spray fogging oil down into the engine. You might have to use the throttle a little bit to keep it running, but do that until it's smoking thoroughly, possibly annoying your neighbors, and then that's the right time to shut it off.
Do you take the spark plugs out and spray some down the holes as well?
That's a common misconception, and I've caught people, including my dad, doing that before. The problem with spraying fogging oil down into the cylinders is it doesn't have a chance to reach those crankshaft bearings on a 2-stroke. To get that oil in those crankshaft bearings, which are the number one thing that we're trying to protect against corrosion on, you have to go to get it down through the carburetors and through the intake system.
All right. Now, corrosion's not such an issue here for a lot of the more freshwater types, but it's still something to be aware of, especially our more blue water listeners.
Yeah, sure. For the folks out in Togiak especially, it's really important to keep that internal corrosion down in your motor. And you can do that by just simply flushing it on the hose. You can buy a flushing adapter from most hardware stores. The other thing that you can think about, too, in those saltwater climates is it's a good idea to look at any corrosion that's happening on the engine itself. And to get that off, you can just usually use a mild detergent and some fresh water through a low-pressure hose to clean it.
Winterization cost and time, start to finish. For the novice,
I think if you've got all your stuff ready to go, you've got your fogging oil and your fuel treatment picked out and your hose all set up for flushing the motor, you're probably looking at it an hour or less. When I do a winterization on one of my engines, I like to do my full annual service on that motor too. That way I know in the spring that it's got fresh oil in it, the spark plugs have been checked, it's got new gear lube and everything, it's really ready to go. So if you're going to do a full service and incorporate your winterized process into that, I don't know, you're probably looking at an hour, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours for a 4-stroke motor, which you've got to change the oil and filter on. But really, it's time well spent.
Gabe Dunham is the MAP agent for Bristol Bay with the Alaska Sea Grant Program. Gabe, good as always to have you.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Well, before we go, there's a joke going around Facebook this week that's worth sharing. It's hard to tell who it's attributable to or if it's new or an oldie but a goodie. Anyway, here goes. The IRS suspected a fishing boat owner wasn't paying proper wages to his deckhand and sent an agent to investigate him. The auditor said, "I need a list of your employees and how much you pay them." The boat owner said, "Well, there's Clarence, my deckhand. He's been with me for 3 years. I pay him $1,000 a week plus free room and board." Then there's the mentally challenged guy. He works about 18 hours a day and does about 90% of the work around here. He makes about $10 a week, pays his own room and board, and I buy him a bottle of Bacardi rum and a dozen Budweisers every Saturday night so he can cope with life. He also gets to sleep with my wife occasionally. The IRS auditor said, "Him, that's the guy I want to talk to, the mentally challenged one." The boat owner replied, "That would be me. What would you like to know?" That's it for this week's show. Find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at our website, kdlg.org. Send feedback and story ideas to me at dave@kdlg.org. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. Hope to see you back here next week.
Through the trees comes autumn with her serenade. Melodies, the sweetest music ever played. Autumn kisses we knew are beautiful souvenirs. As I pause to recall, the leaves seem to fall like tears. Silver stars were clinging to an autumn sky. Love was ours until October wandered by. Let the years come and go, I'll still feel the glow that time cannot fade when I hear that lovely autumn serenade.